It's a driving force in America's frontier legacy. A century and a half ago, prospectors and miners began pouring into the mountain states from Montana to Arizona in search of wealth, or at least a living. As a result, the landscape is peppered with the old mines they left behind. Coming upon them on a hike can be a thrilling connection to our past, but it can also be dangerous. In September 1989, Utah held its breath for 5 days while search teams tried to find a missing 10-year-old boy. Joshua Dennis got lost when his scout group went exploring in an abandoned mine near Tooele. Michael Rawson reported the story for KUTV.
For 5 days, he had cried out for help, but no one heard him. Until today, Joshua's cries and his family's prayers were answered. Josh's mother on the left is embraced by friends who shared her painful vigil. 200 or more friends and strangers had joined in the search. Everyone had all but given up hope. They believed the hidden treasure mine would be Josh's grave.
Not all stories of misadventures in Utah's abandoned mines have such a happy ending. And while they are a fascinating part of the history of the West, abandoned mines can pose a present-day challenge. This is Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. I'm Dan Bonas. The Utah Abandoned Mine Reclamation Program estimates there are about 17,000 abandoned mines across Utah. Many are in remote areas of Utah's West Desert or Colorado Plateau, but some are in places where people live or where they'd like to live if the hazards they posed could be remediated. Corbin Jensen is a geologist with Barr Engineering who works on mine reclamation projects. Along with their underground hazards, he says abandoned mines have environmental risks that can keep the land they occupy from being developed for any other use.
You've got the soil, water, and air to look at. You've got dust from heavy metals that will carry, and those can be treated and remediated by covering up with clean fill and creating a repository or laying a barrier down and then building up on top of that with clean fill, revegetating, things like that. Or with metals, a lot of times you've got metals in the water, and you can remediate that through filtration. And so there's all kinds of different things that we can do, and a lot of it is site specific. You know, what kind of land use is it going to be used as? Is it in the middle of nowhere where, you know, you might have a mountain biker or a dirt biker go by every once in a while? Or is it, you know, in Park City on a hillside where you're going to have hikers and bikers and houses built on it? Like, it's all determined upon land use and what that land is going to be used for. And a lot of land use now is residential, you know, development. And you can't build a house on an area where, you know, your lead and arsenic and other heavy metals are so substantially high that they're hazardous to humans, and so you've got to do something about it.
One of the most important questions in addressing the hazards of abandoned mines is, who pays? In most cases, the mines are private property, still owned by somebody, but it's not always easy to determine who's responsible for them.
A lot of research and a lot of phone calls and finding out who was there and how long it was done. And that's actually part that I really enjoy, is that I'm a big mine history nerd. I love the history of Utah's mining and going back and finding out, you know, what happened and where it happened and who did it, and trying to correlate things and connect them with certain things, and then finding out who owns what and how long they've owned it. And then beyond that, it gets down to legalities and lawyers and things that I put my hands up and say, okay, well, this is what I know and this is what's happened and this is what we need to do and this is how we need to do it and all those things. And then beyond that, the lawyers take over and say, okay, this is what we're going to have to do. And so that's, like I said, it's one of the most difficult parts of this is finding that person responsible and then which portion of the cleanup they pay for.
In many cases, Jensen says developers have been willing to pay for the cleanup because they don't want to wait for the legal process to play out. And in many cases, there is no responsible party. Mine owners are long dead, companies have gone bankrupt, and no one's willing to foot the bill. That's where Utah's Abandoned Mine Reclamation Program comes in. That's a state agency funded by a federal tax on coal production. With a budget of about $3 million a year and a staff of 10, the program works to seal up old mines across Utah. Steve Fluke, the administrator of the state program, says that's actually not such a simple process. Where there was little concern for the environment 100 or more years ago, sealing an abandoned mine today requires the agency to look at whether there are archaeological or cultural resources at risk, and even whether bats have found a home in the dark mine tunnels.
We also have bat biologists go into the mines to determine if they're bat habitat, because we don't want to entomb bats. There are no threatened and endangered bats in Utah, but we do have sensitive species, state-listed species. So we work with Division of Wildlife Resources to make sure that they are protected and that we maintain habitat for them. So we put in gates and grates sometimes if we identify significant habitat, or even if we don't know if it's habitat, but we sometimes leave gates and grates just to maintain a certain level of habitat for the bats.
In all, it takes about 3 years for the state to close up an old mine. Once the environmental surveys have been done and they know where the adits, the horizontal tunnels, and the vertical shafts are, then Fluke says it's time to get to work.
With smaller projects, we do use prison labor. We use Utah Correctional Institute, and they do some closure work for us. But for most of our work, we put it out to bid to contractors. So it goes to the lowest qualified bidder.
How do you close up a mine entrance then?
So we backfill, probably about half of them end up getting backfilled, because backfilling is, it's tends to be cheaper, but with adits, you're just plugging the entrance. So usually, no matter what kind of closure it is, you can get back into it pretty readily, you know, with a day, with a track hoe or something like that, you could open it up pretty easily. So we backfill, we put in walls sometimes if we want to maintain the historic nature, like maintain that adit there. And it's a, you know, really nice cultural feature, or it's a significant cultural feature. Then we might want to put in a wall, or if it's bat habitat, we'll put in a grate. We also use sometimes in shafts, we use polyurethane foam. If there's not enough material to backfill a shaft, which is often the case, we can use a polyurethane foam to plug maybe 15 to 20 feet near the surface. You buy it in 55-gallon drums and pour it in place and let it expand slowly, and you can seal up the part. We put a concrete cap and backfill over it, and it has a drain. So there's an engineered design for it.
When the work is done, they leave an aluminum tag with information about the project. Since they began work in 1983, the program has closed about 6,000 mines across the state. After Josh Dennis was rescued in 1989, the Utah Abandoned Mine Program has also worked to educate the public about the danger. It's a required part of our elementary school curriculum for fourth graders. But the history of mining is the history of Utah. And while those working in mine reclamation want to eliminate the danger, Steve Fluke says they're not trying to eliminate the stories.
You can't help but get that sense and really appreciate the history of the mining that occurred here in Utah, because it was a big part of how Utah developed and was populated. And it was a real important source of income and work for people. And a lot of that ended after World War II, and things changed with mining and the way it was approached and turned into larger mines and less of the mom and pop things. But you can't stand at these mines and go into these old mining areas and without thinking about that.
Utah Foundation is a nonpartisan, nonprofit research group funded by business, philanthropic foundations, higher education, local government, and individual donations. Founded in 1945, our mission is to produce objective, thorough, and well-reasoned research and analysis that promotes the effective use of public resources, a thriving economy, a well-prepared workforce, and a high quality of life for Utahns. Utah Foundation seeks to help decision makers and citizens understand and address complex issues. Utah Foundation also offers constructive guidance to improve governmental policies, programs, and structures. I'm Dan Bomas. Thanks for listening.